Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
When your space has the long-lasting, noticeable scent of Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist, you'll want to invite everyone over. From book club to reality TV watch parties, even the in-laws.
It smells amazing.
Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is infused with 2 times more essential oil versus regular Airwick Essential Mist for our most authentic, nature-inspired fragrance experience. Airwick Vibrant Essential Mist is perfectly portable and effortlessly easy. The way fragrance should be. Now that's a breath of fresh Airwick.
Do you love Making Movies Is Hard and you want to listen to more episodes?
Jump over to our Patreon page at patreon.com/MMIH and you can listen to the entire back catalog of episodes for just $1.99 a month.
That's an additional 300 episodes that aren't on iTunes that you can listen to whenever you please.
But without any more blibber blabber, back to the show!
You know, making movies is hard.
Making movies is hard.
Welcome. This is the podcast about the struggle of being an independent filmmaker. I'm Mark Bissell, the founding host of the podcast, and I'm a sci-fi horror filmmaker. My first feature film, The Alternate, is out now on digital, DVD, and Tubi.
I'm Liz Manischel. I'm a writer, director, producer who has made 2 features, Bread and Butter and Speed of Life, and I'm currently making others, including a horror comedy called Best Friends Forever with Amy Taylor. I'm a distribution consultant who does sales, and I used to manage Sundance's Creative Distribution Initiative. On this Thursday bonus episode, we're going to do something a little different. We aren't going to play a throwback interview, but a throwback discussion from the original co-host, Timothy and Ulrich. And they had this chat about whether film festivals are helpful. And they had it way back in August of 2015 on the 9th episode of the podcast. That's nuts. That's nuts. I'm just speaking for myself. I would love to hear what both of you thought of film festivals back then and compare them to what you think about now. After you listen to that, you're going to hear me and Ulrich play another round of The Game. But first, before we get to that, just wanted to plug our Patreon campaign, www.patreon.com/MMIH podcast for Making Movies Is Hard podcast. It is how we keep the show going. Without your support, we would be nothing. So even $1.99 a month gets you the entire catalog, and you would win our hearts. Without any further bibble babble, here's our throwback discussion with Ulrich and Timothy talking about film festivals.
Let's talk about the topic. What did you take away from film festivals, or did you get anything out of film festivals? That was a question.
I worded it as, did you find film festivals helpful?
Cool.
And I know we covered a lot of this in episode 2, so we should do our best to cover new territory. And then anyone who hasn't heard episode 2, they should go back and listen to it. It was all about filmmaker myths and kind of what we believe would happen if we made it into film festivals and what actually happened to us. So I think we've covered a lot of ground about the idea of film festival and what the reality is behind it. But maybe what we can talk about is, now that we've done it and we're in the shoes that we're in now, would we do it again, or how would we do it differently?
Well, here's what I want to do. I just want to ask you a question, Timothy. Can you break down to me what your first film festival experience was like, and not counting the film festival that you run at your company, but like other
film festival's amazing.
Yeah, I'm sure that's a blast. But but no, like going to like your first outside film festival experience, like just break it down. Just tell me a little story about what that looked like.
I'm trying to remember what it was. I've only been to 4 film festivals.
Wow.
Ever. As a filmmaker, like watching my film. And I think the first one was the Tiburon Film Festival with my first movie out of college. This is like 2006.
Wow.
And I was so excited. My film, I think, because you're going to hate me for this too.
No, really?
Every single time that I've submitted my film to film festivals, I've only submitted to like 4 or 5.
Oh my God. You're so, just begging not to get in.
Yeah, I'm pretty much saying I don't want to make it into a film festival.
I don't really want my film to play at a film festival. I just kind of want the rejection. That's what I want.
Right. I think that's the story of my life. I only submitted to a few film festivals. I made it into Tiburon, so I was really excited. I didn't make it into any other film festivals with that film. And we were slotted into an afternoon time slot in the middle of the week.
Mm, that's the best.
Which I didn't really understand what that was going to be like until I showed up to the screening with my parents and the DP from the movie showed up. No one else showed up. And it was me and those people, plus I think like two other filmmakers. So what is that, like 6 or 7 people in the audience?
Yep.
Uh-huh. In a dark, big, dark movie theater watching probably 6 shorts. So it was a little disheartening. And that film festival didn't really have events around it. It was really just kind of like a local film festival, I think, to kind of support the community and just kind of like make something around it. I've been to other film festivals where there's like lectures that you can attend. There's parties for filmmakers. You know, there's bigger events that you can go to. So it feels like much more of a thing. But this one was literally just showing movies in a movie theater and you could go buy a ticket and go watch it. I went and saw it. I walked out of the movie theater. Kind of shook hands with everyone, like, cool, we just saw a movie in a movie theater. And then that was it.
Yeah. All right. There you go. So I've had a couple of times where I submitted films to film festivals. The first two that I submitted, I didn't get into any. I submitted to, I think, 5 for each of my first early shorts I did in college. And I got no response for any of those. And then I did a documentary that was like 39 minutes long, which is like the worst length ever for a short doc. It's like the stupidest thing to do.
Too long?
Yeah, way too long. I mean, the cutoff for short docs is 40 minutes. So I made it like basically as long as it possibly could be and still be considered a short doc. And I didn't get into any. I submitted to 17. I got into 0. But then I got like 2 like honorary awards. So they're like awards, but they didn't. But my movie wouldn't get screened. So it was like an award without getting screened.
That's interesting. But yeah. You have to like look at it from a festival program point of view. Is if you have a 40-minute film, that's going to take the place of up to like 10 4-minute films. So right. It has to be an exceptional film
right.
For them to want to program it and get rid of those 10 films they could have screened.
And it was funny because at the time when I was editing that movie, I talked to a lot of other documentary filmmakers and they all told me the same thing. They were like, it has to be 20 minutes or under in order for it to actually get programmed. And like the shorter, the better. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, I'm going to do whatever I want because I'm the smartest and I know more. And my movie's so good that it doesn't matter. And
terrible how stubborn we can be as filmmakers? Oh, my God.
Yeah, it was so stupid. And then I didn't get to any. And I wasted all that money submitting. But then strange thing came around. And then I submitted to even more film festivals. And that length was on the money. Like, the first round of submissions, it was 11 minutes. And then I re-edited it, and then I submitted it again. I think I submitted it to like 20, and then I submitted it to like whatever, the other 40 or whatever, or 50. And at the 40 or 50 amount, I submitted it at 10 minutes or under 10 minutes. And then that's when I got into like a bunch of film festivals. I played at over about 20 total. And I went to about 10 of them. What I wanted to do was talk about the worst experience and then the best experience. So you can sort of like see like the two different options.
Let's answer the question that we started out with. First of all, is like, did you find film festivals helpful? Just a yes or no, I think.
Short answer, yes, but not in the way I thought they were going to be.
I totally agree with you. I think film festivals were a great experience, but if you go in expecting something that probably most people that haven't been to a film festival expect, you're going to be disappointed. But now that I've been there, like I know what to expect. I think they're great. They're great places for certain things, but not for everything.
Yeah, I think they're great to be there to support your film, to answer any questions and hopefully get the most people possible to see your movie. I think like that's a really good reason for you to go. So like going with a bunch of flyers and posters and materials and just making sure that as many people as possible will show up to your screening. I think that's a really good reason to go because Just because you got in doesn't mean people are going to show up, as you proved with your first story.
Right. I didn't promote it at all. I just kind of showed up and been like, great, I'm in a film festival. This is awesome.
Yeah. And film festivals will do some promotion, but if you want people to come to your specific screening, like you gotta put butts in the seat yourself. Like you have to be your own marketing company, basically.
Right. I think it's the kind of the same idea as making your movie from the ground up by yourself. Is kind of the same reason you should go to film festivals, because it's all the back end stuff that a lot of people don't think about. And then you're in charge of it. So you're in charge of marketing your movie. And yeah. You can see how hard it is. And it becomes a total separate job from the making of the movie, where now you have to get people excited and interested in it. And how do you do that? So I think that there's that whole backside component is part of the reason. For me, though, I think the main reason to go to a film festival is to see your movie on a big screen with an audience.
Oh, yeah.
That's the one thing the internet doesn't provide. The internet, I think you can do a lot of the same things a film festival does, like getting people to watch it. But I don't think like seeing your movie with other people is something you can do without kind of being a part of a film festival. And that was, to go back to your earlier question, the best film festival experience I have was seeing my movie Man's Best Friend twice with sold out audiences at Cinequest and getting the same reaction both times and just feeling like I nailed it. Like everything I wanted to get out of an audience with that movie, I got out of it. And it was just so fulfilling to watch it in a movie theater on a big screen, everyone laughing and where I wanted them to laugh. Like that experience you can never replicate. It was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's really important to see it with an audience, you know, not just because you get to see the audience experience it, but you also get to learn from the audience, you know, mm-hmm. like yeah. You can learn where your joke that you thought was going to hit didn't hit, or where like something that the audience just loves that you had no idea that they would react to in that way. I think those things are really, really important. And that's what I, you know, got out of it when I saw Strange Thing in the theater for the first time. It was like everyone seemed to laugh at the same moment and everyone seemed to like, you know, have the same kind of reaction at this other moment. And it was really interesting to see like audience to audience, like what people would react to each time they watched it. And, you know, it was often the same, but like there are also always differences too, which was always mm-hmm. fascinating.
Yeah. You know? And it does change audience to audience. Like there's a different energy in the room. And yeah, like, your film might be like super funny to one audience and then not funny to another one. Like, cause I saw it, like, it doesn't even just apply to my film. Like it applies to the other films that were in the festival, seeing it two nights in a row and seeing how the audience reacted to films that played around mine in different ways was also fascinating. And then also the Q&A session at the end where all the filmmakers came up to the front and seeing, which film both nights kind of got the most attention was kind of like, aha, now I kind of see like which film audiences like the most just based off of who they're asking questions to the most. And it happened two nights in a row. So it's just like, you know, it's a little bit of eye-opening experience and you can see that you're competing for attention and a little bit of kind of the manipulation that goes into filmmaking and making sure that you get what you want out of an audience.
I just think it's really fascinating to go and just to experience it. And I think if you do get the chance to do a Q&A, which doesn't always happen, but if that does happen, I think it's a really great learning experience too, because you get to figure out how you're representing your own movie and how you're going to answer questions and react to the audience's reaction to your movie. And I think that is something that is really valuable just to get experience doing, and then also just to learn from yourself. Because like the way that you react to something someone says will tell you a lot about how you feel about your own work, you know, which is kind of funny.
What's your highlight? You're the best moment you've had at a film festival.
I guess it was, geez, really hard to say. Best screening.
It doesn't even have to be a screening. Like what? It could be just meeting somebody else. It could be a lecture that you attended. It could be anything. What was like what's the standout moment is like, oh man, I'm so glad that happened.
Well, okay. I guess going to Toronto was really fun, because I went to this film festival called Toronto After Dark in Toronto last year with my short film Strange Thing. It was a blast. Like I got there and it was at like a big, you know, multiplex theater, But, you know, as soon as you walk in, like, you could see their advertising all around. Like, the film festival had a unique presence in the lobby right away. And then I look up, and what's hanging up above me but a Klingon destroyer facing off against a Starship Enterprise. Not life-size models, obviously, but, like, huge, like, you know, 20 feet by 10 feet starships. So I was like, oh man, I'm in the right place for sure. This is amazing. And then you go up the escalator, and then there's like a huge, like, Toronto After Dark, backdrop where they take all their pictures and stuff. And I can't remember exactly when we arrived. I think it was right before a screening for another movie, but I think we saw the line immediately, and the line was massive. And it was like, just to see this huge line for this film festival, this like science fiction horror film festival, I was like, oh man, this is amazing. And then when we got into the theater and it was like a packed crowd, and just the presentation and how excited everybody was to be there to see those movies, I was just like, man, this is the shit. Like, I can't, this is the kind of film festival experience I want, where there's like big crowds, really enthusiastic programmers. They came right up and introduced themselves. And, you know, my screening was the next day, but I met, the short, film, programmer, I think that night, and they were just so nice and so friendly. And it was just an amazing experience. And then the next day, the short film program was in a smaller theater than the main event at night, but it was still like a, you know, 250 seat auditorium, and it was pretty much packed. And, yeah, it was great. And I think the night before, I'd already met some writers who were there covering the film festival. So I already knew there were some journalists there to like cover things. And yeah, it was a blast. And then every night after the film festival, everyone would go to a bar across the street, and like, you know, you got free drink tokens, and, you know, everyone would just hang out and talk. And I just talked all night to people. And I think I met a journalist that night, and we just talked. And then I met like this person who worked at a production company in Canada, and she was giving me her advice on like how to get a movie made. And it was just so much fun. It was just That's a blast. So
cool. It's kind of like all the best that you imagine out of being a part of the film industry, like distilled into like an event. And at a level where you're like, I'm not part of the film industry, but at this moment, I feel like I'm part of it. Like having an audience excited and like having people talk to you and meeting other filmmakers and meeting journalists, like it's so exciting and so much fun. And I don't think it's not something I don't think you can get from trying to do a release online. So that's why I think that the film festival experience is different. I think there's a lot of arguments for releasing a film online, but I think the film festival experience is unique and will continue to live on just because of all the reasons we're talking about that were our favorite moments from it.
Yeah. And one of the things they did at that film festival is like, they would show a short before a feature every night at the main event or whatever. Uh-huh. And they would bring the short filmmaker out, have them introduce their short. And then they would go away and they would show the short. And then I can't remember if they would do the Q&A for the short right then or if they would do it at the end. I think they would do it at the end after the feature event. But it was just really fun to have the filmmaker out there and be there to support their movie and then like talk about it a little bit before they showed it. And then when we did the screening with my short film playing, I opted not to introduce it. And I sort of regretted that immediately because like I think introducing it, whether or not you have a lot to say about the movie, like because you don't necessarily want to ruin anything. You just want to sort of, you know, whatever. But I think it's just good to talk to the audience as much as you can, just because that, you know, creates a connection between the filmmaker and the audience. And I think it's just a special thing. Cause I feel that when I'm an audience member and I hear a filmmaker talk about their movie and I love that experience. So I feel like that's something I would do.
I think you appreciate it more because you know that they're coming at it from a certain perspective, and it's less about like your enjoyment of it and more about an appreciation of like what went into like putting that film together.
Yeah. And I mean, we still did a Q&A, but I mean, I was really nervous because I think that was at the point the most people who was in a room to see the movie at once. And I was just so excited to be there. And then I was standing next to this actress who was in another movie that played with mine that actually has like, I think it's got like 500,000 hits online right now. It released like a week before my film did online. And she was amazing. And so I'm standing next to her and I'm like, oh my God, like her movie was so much better than mine.
I felt like, that way at Cinequest. It was funny. There was a the story is funny just because looking back on it now, I became the person that I hated. There's a film that played with mine that they spent $40,000 on, and they had Richard Warburton in it, and everyone loved it, mainly because there was a name actor in it. And of course, like, the production value was spectacular. I mean, it blew every other film away because they spent so much money on it. And I remember after the scene that being like, man, what a waste of money, $40,000 for a short film. I'll never spend $40,000 on a short film. Like, I could do like so many short films for $40,000. And then lo and behold,
you went way above and beyond that amount.
I
went
above and beyond, and I spent $100,000 on a short film. So who's the idiot now?
Yeah, I don't know. I just think it's like different levels of what you expect to get out of it, you know. And I'm really curious to see Spirit Machine and where that goes, because I think it's going to go in amazing places.
I don't know about that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I know you're skeptical, but I mean,
I am so skeptical that anything's going to happen with that. Because as much as I want to believe that I'm wrong, and I'm trying to like sometimes fight against my instincts, I know I'm right. Because when I see a film that I know is good, there's a feeling inside of me that says, this is good. Pay attention to this. This is good. And I don't have that feeling when I watch my movie. Like, I feel the feelings like, oh, like at first it feels like it's good, and then it starts falling apart, and then no, it's not good. It's not good. This sucks. I think there's good parts of it, but as a whole, it's not that great. So we'll see. I could be wrong, but I don't think that I am. I think it's not going to do much of anything.
I think you just need to be positive, and you need to support your movie and be proud of it and put on a smile whenever you talk about it and whenever you show it to anybody. And I think that will go a long way in how far it goes, you know?
Yeah, and I definitely will. And I'm sorry for the people listening to this podcast. I probably sound very negative, and like my personal side of me is very negative, but when I do go out there and pitch it, I'm definitely going to be like super positive and try to drum up the enthusiasm for it. Cause I know that it has less to do with how I feel about the movie and more to do with how other people perceive it. I'm just very skeptical that anyone's going to see anything great in it. And they're just going to be like, oh, cool, dude, you made a movie. Congratulations. It shouldn't have taken you that long.
Well, I felt the same way about Strange Thing when I was submitting it to festivals and releasing it. I thought like, hey, this might be good, but like, it's definitely not what I want it to be, you know, but I just, you know, I'd always just like stand behind it and just be excited about it. And I guess the first cast and crew screening went really well. So that was a really big help because I had such a good reaction from people in a room, you know, and then like, I had to remind myself that that's family, friends and family. So, I mean, of course it's going to be a good reaction, you know, but it was just a really encouraging experience. And then when I got to Boston to show it, it was like, you know, it wasn't that. it was a little bit of a different reaction. And then I re-edited it after that point. And then I was way happier with it.
What happened in Boston? Let's hear about that. Was that at a film festival?
Yeah, in Boston. It played at the science fiction film festivals there, and yeah, the audience was there's a really tough audience, and I think they got a pretty good reaction. But then I'd already met some of the people beforehand, and then like the first thing someone said to me was like, you know, something about one of the effects I had in there. I had this hand effect in at one point.
I heard about that.
And they were like, oh, yeah. Did I tell you about that?
I asked to see that cut, and you wouldn't show it to me.
Rev up your thrills this summer at Cedar Point on the all-new Top Thrill 2. Drive the sky on the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch vertical speedway. And it's your last chance to get more fun for less with our limited-time bundle for just $49.99. Get admission, parking, and all-day drinks for one low price. But you better hurry, because this limited-time bundle ends June 30th. Save now at cedarpoint.com.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent, being there day and night, and building a plan for tomorrow, today. for the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Oh, right. Yeah. And then, like, yeah, he's like, oh, yeah, everything was so great, except that hand. That hand was so, like, like, were you trying to go for, like, the 40s, like, creature feature-y, sort of, like, looking fake sort of thing? Was that part of your mission? And I was like, oh, God. Oh, man, oh, God. And I just, my heart sank, and I, like, put on a good face. I was like, no, yeah, whatever. And then I went home, and I re-edited it. And my mom had been telling me the whole time how she thought that was the worst part. My mom had been like, oh, you got to take the hand out. The hand's terrible. And like, my mom was like, just really hard on me about the hand. And then to go to Boston and have them say the same thing that my mom said was like killer. But then, months later in August, I, was at another film festival and they couldn't get my Blu-ray to play. And so
this happened to me too. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, so I had to go to my car and get my old DVD, which was the one with the hand version. And I played that one. Yeah. And then it killed. People literally screamed at the hand in that screening. And I was like, oh God, like what the fuck? Like, I don't know. Like, it's just
so
really
hard, right?
Yeah. I mean, I feel like people react to different things in different ways. And, you know, some people are going to love the hand and some people are going to hate the hand. And,
yeah, you just kind of have to accept that at the end of the day that, like, you're going to have some people love it, you're going to have some people hate it. Like, you can take the best movie in the world, and there's going to be people that love it and hate it. There's not everyone's going to ever agree on anything.
And it's like, what do I love the most? And I think in the end, I loved not The Hand the most, but I think it's like that comes down to the filmmaker. It's like you have to be the one that you're trying to please first rather than trying to please everyone else, because you can never please everyone, you know?
No, but I think that what you said about you showing it to an audience and somebody talking to you and then you heard that and then you made the change and now you like it better, I think that's also a really important part of showing it to an audience, is to hear the reaction and then learning from it. On my first film out of college, when we showed it, I had no idea that there was like this huge plot hole, and then everyone pointed it out. So the basic premise was a guy would go into like a dark space and then he would transport through like time and space. So he was like constantly like going through these like miniature portals through time and space and reliving these moments in his life like out of order. And I had to transport him from like his house. And the way that I did it was I had his wife put him into the closet, which to me made sense when I was writing it. It's like, yeah, she's going to surprise him for their anniversary. So she says, wait in the closet. And then she's going to like lay out this dinner and candles and then like, okay, you can come out now. And then he's like, oh, thanks, honey. But it was just such a weird thing for his wife to put him in the closet that people were just like, why did she put him in the closet? I don't understand.
That's funny.
But to me, it made so much sense. And no one during the making of the movie said anything. And we all believed it. But then when we showed it to audiences, we learned. So the whole like putting people into a closet is something I never do again.
Well, yeah, I think it's also like the thing I'm doing right now with Brother, where I'm showing it to like maybe 5 to 6 different people and getting feedback. I think that is important. I don't know if you did that with that movie or not.
Yeah, I don't remember. No,
that kind of helps.
Yeah,
weed
I think
out.
It does help. It does get really confusing though when you start showing it to just a small group of people, because if you show it to 5 people, you're going to get 5 different opinions, and then you're like, which opinion do I believe? I don't know.
If there's any correlation on feedback, then that's always a really easy way to tell. Right. If like 5 people are saying the same thing or 3 people are saying the same thing, it's usually like, okay, that thing, you should look at that thing closely, you know, and figure out what to do about it. One other thing I wanted to say was in more than just being responsible for getting your audience to your screening at a film festival and being your own publicist and marketer, mm-hmm. you also need to like be like in aware of how your movie's being presented, because we both talked about, like, you know, my Blu-ray didn't work at one place and your Blu-ray didn't work at another place. Like, you just have to make sure that, I mean, because the film festival is going to do a really good job, or the best job they can, to make sure that they're showing the movies in the best way. But especially film festivals that are small and that are trying to show a lot of movies, it's going to be really challenging for them. So you have to be really aware of, like, you know, making sure that your movie is actually working on their system, that it looks the way that you want it to look, and that you have backup options with you just in case something happens. Cause like that's going to, you know, I mean, it's not always going to go wrong, but it always could go wrong. So every film festival I go to, if I'm wearing a blazer or a suit jacket, I always keep a Blu-ray, a DVD, and a flash drive in my pocket, just in case.
Just in case. That's smart. I think that's probably the worst experience I have was my film not playing correctly. And I think that they had to restart it 3 times, and it was just killer. It's like a killer feeling to see a minute of a movie and then it restarts from the very beginning again, and the audience has to sit through that minute again. I think they did it like 3 times, and it just, like, I thought it was going to just ruin it completely. But then it took a while because it ruined that first minute. But then, you know, about halfway through the film, I think people forgot about it and they got back into it. But at that moment, it was just like, no, why is this happening to me?
Yeah. Or like, it's happened to me before, as my movie comes up and there's no sound.
Yeah. Actually, I think that's what happened, is it had no sound for like a minute and then they restarted it. I don't remember, but it was bad.
So my worst experience was driving to LA to a screening of Strange Thing at a film festival sort of in the outskirts of LA. And I drove all day. I had a shoot in the morning. I left at noon and I got there at like maybe 7:30, and my screening was at 8:00. And I got there in time. I was there half hour early. I go up. It's at another megaplex. There's less, you know, advertising for the film, like in the lobby, but you could sort of see, oh, there's the poster. And then you go upstairs, and then they had a huge setup upstairs, like with all the posters, postcards, and like they signed you in, they gave you a badge, they took your picture. So I was like, okay, this is a really well run festival. Like, this is really exciting. They gave me a big booklet, you know, with like every movie in it. And I was like, okay, great. So then I go to my screening, and there's 4 other people there. And my star, who lived in LA, came with me. So it's me, my star, and then
yeah,
3 or 4 other people. And I was like, oh my God, I just drove all the way to LA for this. Like, oh my goodness. It was.
It's the worst, because you spent all this money to make it into a film festival. And then when you show up and there's nobody in the audience, you kind of feel like you're cheated. You're like, why? What's the point? Why are they even playing my movie when it's like just me in a theater with other people that I know? Like, we've all seen it before. This is right. Dumb. Like, you want it to be shown to people that haven't seen it.
Right. And one of the things that was really even more of a heartbreaker about that is, like, when we were walking up to the theater, there was probably like maybe 20 or 30 other people there. And I was like, oh, cool. Like, there's actually going to be some people. And then they had 4 screens running movies at the same time for the film festival. Yeah. So everybody broke off, and then like 20 of the 30 went into one theater, 5 went into the other, and then 5 went into mine.
Yeah. I mean, all film festivals are not created equal, and you don't have to be at like a huge film festival to get a big audience. I think you just have to be at the right film festival, and some film festivals have a bigger following than others. I mean, I don't know if Cinequest is like really a huge festival. I don't feel like it is, because I've been going there for a long time, but I feel like they do a good job of like making sure that there's like a lot of people like in those screenings. And both of the screenings that my short film played at were sold out. And it was like one of those kind of midnight screenings. I think it's like a 11 o'clock start time or something.
That's cool.
I think you just have to find the film festival that can get the most people to watch your film. And there's so many out there. So how do you choose which film festivals you're going to submit to?
I think after doing it in a big way for Strange Thing, I learned a lot, because, like, you know, it's really hard to tell like which film festivals are going to have a lot of people show up to them, because like on their websites, they might all look pretty good, you know, because they're going to show the best pictures from all their different events to like make it look bigger than it is sometimes, or make it look the best that it can be. And I think one of the ways you can really tell if an audience is going to be there or not, and it doesn't always work, but like amount of likes they have on Facebook, and then if they have a Twitter account, how many followers they have on Twitter. I think that really kind of sometimes will help set it apart, because if they have anywhere under 2,000, you know it's going to be really, really small. But if they have anything like 3,000, 4,000, 5,000, 6,000, then you know there's a better chance that it's going to be a big event. But,
That's interesting. I like that. Yeah.
But one of the problems is like if it's a, it's a 10-day film festival or a 2-week long film festival, it's like the day your film gets played becomes really important, you know, because if it's on a weekend, like there's a way larger chance that they're going to, you know, be a big audience there. Or if it's the opening weekend or the closing weekend, that's also going to make a big difference whether or not you're going to have a big audience. And it's like every screening is different. Like I went to film festivals, like that same one where there was only 4 people in my audience. I went the next day and like, you know, there were times where all 4 theaters were completely packed, you know, and it just depended on the screening, you know, and it could be like, you know, the one at 8 o'clock packed, the one at 9 o'clock empty for that theater, you know, and it was just really interesting to see the way it went, you know, and
a little bit of a crapshoot then, right?
It is. I think it always is. And I think you can kind of tell like by what block you get and like what kind of theater you're playing on, like you can make playing in, you can sort of see, you know, how many people you can expect to be there. But I think the best way to go about it is just to do your own marketing and your own publicity and, you know, reaching out to local newspapers and letting them know that there's a film festival in their town if they're not already aware. Because sometimes the film festival will do that, but sometimes the film festival doesn't have time to hit every local newspaper. So if you can reach out to them and say, hey, I got a short film. I'm coming in from, you know, Oakland, California to whatever town it is. Here's what my movie's about. You should totally cover it and whatever. Like maybe they'll write a story about it. Maybe they won't, but at least you're doing your best to make sure that the most people possible will know about it when the screening happens.
Yeah. You know? That's cool. I had some bad experiences reaching out to journalists for CineQuest. I think I went about it the wrong way. I like the way that you're saying. Yeah. It was just kind of like, I think I kind of almost wrote the article for them.
Kind of
And then just like, hey, I don't remember how I did it. It was just stupid of me. Just kind of sent them out like, hey, consider running the story. And then it was like almost like a written article about Man's Best Friend playing at CineQuest. Huh. Man's Best Friend is a story about blah, blah, blah. And Timothy Plain is a local filmmaker from, you know, whatever it was. One journalist wrote back to me and was like, you should never write a story for a journalist. I think the way you're going about this is totally wrong. You should change your tactic.
Wow.
And I think, so be careful if you are going to reach out to journalists. I think the way that you just said it is like the best way is be like, hey, I don't know if you already know about this, but there's a film festival in your area. I'm coming in from Oakland. My short film is playing in this and this program. You should totally cover it. I think is like an awesome way to like set it up.
Yeah, I don't know. That's interesting because like I've heard from other people and listening to other people talk about reaching out to journalists that you want to make it as easy on the journalists as possible to cover
exactly
your story.
That's exactly why I did it. I thought, yeah. They're not going to put a bunch of time and effort into it. So I thought I'll just write a little blurb for it so they just like copy and paste and they can promote it. But that's,
yeah, that didn't work out. There's obviously a fine line, I guess, because I never heard that story before, and that's fascinating. Because when I did my reach out for Strange Thing for the online release, I didn't do quite what you did, but I did something kind of similar where I just sort of, I included all the information about the short. Like I, you know, just kind of told my own version.
Like a little blurb, like a synopsis.
It was like my own little story about the short film. So it was like,
gotcha.
Here's how I made it. Here's what it's about. Here's what I, what's happened with it so far. I'd love you. And here's the link. I'm releasing it on Monday. If you like the movie, please, you know, feel free to write about it or whatever I said. And I think that actually went a long way because then I would read other articles that were written about it and they would like use exactly the information that I had provided in my email. So I knew they had gotten my exact email and that they just didn't find the link on their own.
Yeah, that was my idea too. And for some reason, it just didn't work out. Maybe it's the types of people that I was reaching out to. Like, were you reaching out to more like blogs?
Yeah, blogs and, you know,
I think
sort
I was
of
reaching out to like real newspapers, like San Francisco Chronicle. And
yeah, but it could have even just been the wording too. Like,
could have been.
Know,
I just rubbed people the wrong way, I think.
Because I didn't say anything about run this story. I was like, I just have this movie and whatever, whatever. And I don't know. Maybe it's just the small differences that made the difference, you know?
Yeah, like your text message last night.
Oh, yeah, my text message. It's so funny. I should tell the story. So Timothy said, oh, we should take listener questions for episode 10. And I wrote, we could. Just we could. And then right after that, I was like, oh, I meant to say we should. And then I put exclamation point at it. And then he was like, wow, that's completely different. And I wasn't sure if he was being sarcastic or not. But then I realized that he was actually being serious. And I was like, yeah, I guess it does make a big difference with the wording you choose.
Words. Yeah, it makes a huge difference. So craft yeah. your emails carefully when you're doing PR pushes. Exclamation points help, emoticons.
Yeah, although I wouldn't want to like write an email to journalists with a bunch of smiley faces and rocket ships and dolphins or whatever.
I have, there's a producer I work with that uses like the word smile in parentheses in his emails all the time. And it's just a funny technique because it's kind of like the old version of emoticons.
Smile. Frown.
Yeah, exactly. it doesn't have the same impact, I don't think, as like an emoticon.
Yeah. So going back to film festivals, I guess I would just say like, you know, they're really special and wonderful. And I just think that a lot of times, like myself included, you get really excited about what it means to play at a film festival. And like you suddenly think it's going to be this world where your film will play. It'll be a packed house. And then after the screening, an agent will come up to you and say that they want to sign you. And then, you know, all your dreams will come true. And that's not what a film festival is. But it can be some of those things. Like it can be the audience and it can be a place where people connect with you about your movie. But I mean, I think there's a lot of work that goes into a film festival, you know, that you have to do on your own if you want to have the best experience, you know, and I think people just need to be ready to come at it with that kind of energy, you know?
Yeah. And we're obviously only talking about short films. I think once you get to the feature film level, film festivals play a completely different role. And you're then now kind of out there with your film trying to get distribution or people interested in it. So part of the reason I didn't submit my film to like a bunch of film festivals ever is because I just feel like they're really expensive. And you have to enter a lot in order to make it into just a few. I think my acceptance rate is 1 out of every 5 festivals I entered in, made it in. If I got accepted, there's years that I entered films that I didn't make it in at all. What was your acceptance rate?
So yeah, I sent in to about 70 and I got into 20. So what's that? That's like that's pretty good, right?
It's like 1 out of 3. That's really good.
Yeah.
But had you only entered 3 film festivals, do you think you would have made it into 1?
No.
It's weird how that works, right?
Actually, I would have technically because Boston was one of the first I submitted to, and I got into that one right away. So I might have, but only I probably would have only gotten into 1.
We've had this conversation outside of the podcast, but you have to temper your expectations with the film festivals you enter. If you hear that statistic like, oh, I'm going to make it into 1 out of 5 film festivals, I'm going to submit to Sundance, Toronto, Berlin. You know, if you enter only the big film festivals, you're probably not going to make it into any of them. So I think one of the things that you did a really good job at was enter film festivals that you realistically had a chance to make it in. I'm the stupid one out of the two of us that always is like reaching beyond my grasp. And it's like, if I can't make it into Sundance, I don't want to make it into anything.
Yeah, I think it's really hard to do that, though, because, like, you want to pick the film festival that's the best for your movie, you know? And, like, even the ones that aren't even the big ones, like the Austin Film Festival is a really big one, but that one's almost like a Sundance to me at this point, because it's, like, so big and really hard to get into, and same with South by Southwest and, you know, Tribeca, like, all these ones, like, are just really really difficult. But I mean,
if you've heard of a film festival, it probably means that it's really big.
I would say that's pretty accurate. But I mean, I think, you know, you just got to pick the right ones for your movie. And like, you know, being a pretty much exclusively a genre filmmaker right now, like in the horror sci-fi genre, there's a lot of genre film festivals for me to pick from. And I think focusing on those is really important. And then also just trying to find the ones that would play a movie like mine, you know, and Yeah, so I'm just trying to focus it in that way, and I'm really actually more focusing about when the film festival happens, because I want the movie to get online as soon as possible. I don't want to wait a year like I did with Strange Thing. So I'm trying to pick ones that have like, you know, screening dates that are coming up really soon, so I can like, you know, get it online this year. And then after it premieres and it goes online, I'll probably still submit it to some film festivals just to see where it'll play at. But I'll definitely probably focus on that less than I did with Strange Thing, just because to me, it's more about, you know, getting it out into the world and online than it is about playing at film festivals.
Yeah, and I would say to anyone who's debating whether or not to do film festivals or an online release, if your goal is not really to see your movie in a theater with other people or meet other filmmakers or just kind of network, then just release it online. There's plenty of arguments for releasing your movie online and just doing that. I mean, there's I know Ulrich's been a part of a podcast where they talked exactly about that, and also I've seen a statistic recently where a kind of like a case study of a filmmaker that compared their online release to the film festival release, and it's like broke it down by how many people saw it and how much interest from the industry did they get. And it's like film festivals, they got zero interest from the industry, but online they ended up getting interest from the industry, and the numbers of people that saw it were like so much more. So you don't have to go to a film festival. I think it's if you feel like especially nowadays, like so many people watch movies online. I think the landscape has really changed. Like even when did I go to the Worldwide Short Film Festival? 2011. So like 4 years ago, they were telling me that not to release a movie online until 4 years after it was made. But that's totally changed.
Oh my God, that's
totally
crazy.
I mean, it's crazy. I have the notes in front of me from kind of like short film distribution and festival lecture that I attended. And the notes in here are so outdated, and it's only been 4 years. So that's things crazy. Are changing. And I think there's plenty of reasons just to release online. But I'm old school in how I enjoy movies, and I really like going to a movie theater. So it's always important for me to see it with an audience.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in it too. And I think if you're just starting out, or you know, you've got your movie and you're ready to, you're trying to figure out the best way to release it into the world, I think a film festival is a good component of it, you know, because you'll learn a lot from seeing it with an audience, and then you'll meet a lot of really cool people. I mean, whether or not they're agents or distributors, you're going to meet really, really cool filmmakers and people that you might collaborate with, people that you might be friends with forever, people that you might just talk to every couple years at different film festivals. But I think creating those relationships is really fun and interesting, and I think it helps you grow as a filmmaker too. And then just watching other people's movies, because you learn so much from seeing what other people do.
It. Seeing movies that are curated by a programmer and seeing them up against yours is such a learning experience, and teaches you a lot about like what else is being made out there. You're only going to get so much of that by trying to find films online, but it's a different thing to like watch something that somebody else has curated and put on a screen in front of you.
Imagine bold, naturally aged Tillamook cheddar slices melting over a burger, eating thick cut cheddar shreds straight from the bag. It's nice to dream about cheese for a bit. Tillamook cheddar, extraordinary dairy.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
Yeah, like what I learned from doing that was just that, like, there's so many amazing short films being made right now. Like going to like 10 different film festivals and seeing all these different short films at different short film blocks. Like my mind was blown about how high the standard is now, you know? So it really made me like open my eyes to like where you need to be as a filmmaker if you want to stand out, you know? Like you just have to be telling really interesting stories, you know, you just do.
And I would say even if you're not submitting a film to a film festival, it's good just to go to film festivals. I went to a lot of film festivals. I used to go to a ton more, and it's gives you a different perspective if you're just filling your head with Hollywood movies or independent movies that are being distributed mainstream wise. It's a different perspective than seeing like what a bunch of filmmakers just like you are making out there. And I think it's good to see that stuff.
Watching someone else's movie where they just didn't care what anybody said and they just did what they wanted to do in their heart and they just made the movie that they wanted to make. I think that is pretty powerful, you know.
What else is there to say about film festivals?
I don't know, man. They're a lot of fun, you know. And it's interesting because my wife, she'll make fun of me because I'll go to these film festivals and buy plane tickets and whatever and rent a hotel room and all this stuff. And she's like, "Oh, you're off on vacation having fun." And it's like, no, I'm working. This is like real work. But it's true. It is a lot of fun. Like, it's the most fun work that you'll do as a filmmaker, going to film festivals for your movie. Yeah. I mean, it's a blast.
It is totally a blast. I had such a good time going to film festivals. I wish that I had done more. I don't regret not spending more money and making it into more festivals. I think I got the right amount of experience that I need. And now that I know what they're for, like, and that I've experienced it, I'm kind of less interested on doing it at the shorts level and more interested in doing it with a feature on the next round. But I'm really looking forward to doing it again. I think it's definitely an awesome experience and everyone should try it.
I don't know. I mean, I'm really excited to see what it's going to be like to bring my feature that hasn't been made yet into a film festival. Like, I think that'll be a completely new experience. And yeah, I'm excited to see what that's like. But, you know, yeah, that's a long way off.
I know. How many years off do you think that is?
Realistically, I think it's at least 2 years off, you know, because even if I make my movie next year, if I shoot it in 2016 or God forbid at the end of this year, which is completely unrealistic, it's still going to be like at least probably a year of post-production before it's ready. So I think any All Right Purcell feature will either come out like late 2016 or early or like sometime in 2017. What about you? What's your estimation for the Timothy Plain feature?
10 years.
Oh my God. You're hilarious.
I know. I love that you're always the positive one and I'm always the negative one.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think things can happen really fast. Like the movie that I just worked on, I don't know when he wrote it, but they only went into pre-production in, I think it was May, late May. Like, yeah. they spent like maybe a month of pre-production or like a month and a half. And then, yeah, they're already editing it right now. And I think they're trying to be done for Sundance deadline in September. So, you know, that was like 8 months or not even.
I don't know if this is going to be the reality for me, but the less you care about something, kind of like going back to your metaphor of like trying to find a relationship, the more you've given up on something, the better chance you have of finding it sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. I think
I don't know. Maybe me saying 10 years means I'm going to beat you to the feature thing. You're saying 2 years, and that'd be funny if like all of a sudden next week I said, "Hey, Ulrich, I'm shooting a feature in September."
I already kind of feel like you're going to be first no matter what, you know, but I mean, that's just because I kind of feel like you have more connections into that world and you've got more things cooking. But you never know. I mean, it could honestly, like, we could meet the right person and then we could be fast tracked at any time. You have no idea.
It's well, that's crazy. Why I tell myself 10 years. So that way then I'll be excited about what happens. Cause if it takes me 10 years, oh my gosh, shoot me. But at the same time, I'm preparing myself knowing how long it's taken me to get to this point. I'm so tired of like setting unrealistic goals for myself because every time I don't meet them, then I just feel super depressed and feel like a failure. So if I set goals that are more realistic, then it'll be like, "Hey, I thought it was going to take me 10 years and it only took me 5. This is amazing." Whereas if I was like, "I'm going to do it in 2 years," then if it takes me 5, I'll be like, "Oh man, it took me 5 and I thought it was going to take me 2. I suck."
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't know. I just think you just need to keep on working at it, you know, and keep on growing as an artist and things will just happen, you know.
God damn you and your optimism.
I know. I'm terrible.
No, I love it. Actually, I love it. You inspire me. I love hearing your optimism because it makes me want to be more optimistic. I think I used to be a lot more optimistic and then I just kind of kept getting kicked in the balls.
I just think that, like, you know, if December rolls around and you haven't, you're either not in development on a feature or, you know, like you're kind of like where you are now, I think we should go ahead and make another short film together.
Okay. Deal.
You know, just because then that'll be good. And then the same thing for me, like if May rolls around or April rolls around and I don't have anything going on, then I'll just make another short.
Yeah, I think we just got to kind of force each other to do stuff. Like, this podcast was good. You're just like, hey, let's make a podcast. I said, okay, cool. When should we start? And you said, how about next week? It's like, what? Yeah. And it was good. You pushed it on a fast track. And I think you need somebody in your life to help kind of push you to do stuff. Cause yeah, sometimes you wait to do things on your own volition, it just never happens. So I'm glad I have a friend like you. We're going to end on a positive note. I'm glad I have a friend like you, and let's push each other to keep making things happen.
Yeah, man. I'm glad I have a friend like you, because you keep me grounded in reality. You know? and then when I push, you also push back. So like if I push, it's like, and then I give up, then you push me right back. Cause I remember like when I said the podcast thing, you were like, yeah. And I was like, oh fuck. He said yes. Oh Jesus. And then all of a sudden, like, we're doing it. And it was like, oh man, like I wasn't even sure if I was ready. It was just an idea.
There are some moments when we first started it where I just kept on doing stuff so quickly and you're just like, dude, I can't keep up.
Yeah, man. It's pretty crazy, but I'm really glad it's worked out that way. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. It's been a lot of fun.
Auric, did you listen to what you said about film festivals, and do you feel the same way?
I didn't listen, but I do think I remember this conversation, and I think I said something like that I have never personally had like any like big, like, you know, meeting or success or life-changing event happen from a film festival. But what I have had is wonderful, wonderful conversations and met lots of wonderful people and some who've become friends at film festivals. And I feel like that is really the magical thing that film festivals can do. That's how I know Andrew Schrader, film festival. Saw his movie. I was at this film festival in San Jose, and my movie had just screened. It was a good screening. I was feeling pretty good. And then there was a feature playing in the same main theater where I was. I was like, I'll watch this feature. And it was Andrew's movie, and it was really great, and I really enjoyed it. And I was like, went to the bathroom. I think, have I told you this story before?
I think you did a long time ago. Please keep going.
Yeah, I went to the bathroom, and there was some guy in the bathroom, and I was like, dude, did you just see that movie? Oh, so good. I really liked it a lot. He was like, yeah, I directed that. That was my movie. And I was like, dude, really? Oh my God. So cool.
Oh my gosh.
You know, it's just really, like, that's the kind of thing that can only happen at a film festival. You know, I think it was just really fun. And then we went to like the awards dinner together and like kind of palled around for the rest of the festival. It was only one night, I guess, but like still, it was just a really fun thing. And then we became friends from there. And then he's been on the show more than anyone, I think.
He's awesome. We love Andrew Schrader.
Yeah, but I think that's what I said. And I think I kind of feel the same way now, although we have had an overwhelming amount of people who have talked about how film festivals have changed their life on the show. Probably not like hundreds, but like at least 20, I would say. Mm-hmm. So I it definitely happens. Like, people definitely get into film festivals, and it definitely makes a big impact on their career. It's just yet to have happened to me. That's all. But maybe one day it'll happen. I've had some amazing experiences, though. I mean, going to Italy and like winning the best prize of this Italian like genre film festival. That was like, you know, I'll never forget that. Like, that was incredible. But it's like, did that change my career? Am I directing movies for big budgets now or any budgets? No.
No, but the combination of all the film festival experiences make a big dent in your life is what I deciding for you.
Definitely. I think so. I mean, what do you think about it? Like, how do you feel about film festivals? Have you personally like gone to a film festival and like had like a major impact on your career as a director?
I think I've made relationships, just like you've been saying. Like, you know, I met my producer Pardee Sullins at film festival during the film festival run for my first feature that I wouldn't have met her any other way. You know, like, there's certain people who have come into my life who I only know from film festivals. But I think for me, the film festival draw is like a weird ego thing that I may slowly but surely be getting over as I get older. And it's just like, I want to be in the club so badly. And I feel like film festivals represent a very hard to get into club. You know, like, I just want them to like me, and I want them. And it's kind of funny because I do film festival lobbying, But I don't do it for the top tier film festivals. I do it for the regional film festivals. And I do it because I want to cheerlead films, you know, to play and support regional audiences. Like, I really do believe in regional film festivals and want to support them and want them to continue. But I think my personal draw to film festivals is like it's a door I can't open. It's a window I can't crack. You know, it feels like a club I can't get into. And that doesn't seem like a healthy instinct. So I'd rather think of it as a supplement, a complement, a partner, rather than like this thing that I feel shut out from, so to speak. Mm,
yeah. I don't know. Film festivals are very complicated because, you know, we talked to David Lawson yesterday, who this episode will come out, you know, in probably 3 or 4 weeks or something. Him and his company have had like incredible film festival success. Like, you couldn't ask for better film festival success. He said that every one of his movies had either premiered at Tribeca. What was it? Tribeca?
South by Sundance, TIFF.
Yeah, TIFF. Yeah, like all the big ones.
Yeah.
I was like, damn. Like, even my producer, Jeff, who like has made like over 24 movies, like, he hasn't been to all of those. Like, I think he's been to, like, Sundance, South by, Tribeca, but I don't think he's ever had a movie at TIFF before. Yeah. So it's like, you know, I mean, that's incredible that they've had all that success. But yeah, I kind of feel like, you know, I would never think that, yes, like, I'm just one movie away from, like, getting into Sundance or to TIFF or whatever. But, like, I do think that, you know, as a filmmaker, it's like you still need to like be submitting your movies to these people, you know, especially your features, because you never know like what's going to hit and what's going to happen. And maybe you have a connection, maybe you have zero connections, like whatever, but like it's worth to keep doing it to like see if that will work out, because, you know, yeah, I don't know, just because who knows? And then who knows what will happen from there? It's like kind of like the big lottery of filmmaking, you know?
I only partially agree with that, but I do think that I'm trying to find ways to like hack the timeline of distribution, because I think you shouldn't be speeding up festival programmers. They're exhausted. They're watching so much. I'm not expecting them to shorten their turnaround window, but I do think people either submit too early and then they're exhausted by the time they get to consumer. Right. So you and I have both made that mistake of submitting our films too early and then kind of have these like questions of like, what if I submitted on time? What if I submitted the film when it was ready? But ultimately, like, there needs to be a compromise between the festival window and that, what I call like the community screening or semi-theatrical window, and then theatrical, then digital. It's like there's too many windows of distribution, and it's why filmmakers are exhausted. So yes, I believe that we all should be submitting to film festivals, but there must be some way we can hack the timing of submissions so that we're not just sitting there for like a year and a half thinking that a festival is going to upend our life in some way and then have to re-pick up momentum after that when it doesn't. So I'm just thinking, what can be done? And then maybe that's not something we could find an answer for right now, but it really comes at a cost of time and labor to filmmakers, and obviously submission fees.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I feel like, you know, the sweet spot, I mean, I don't know what you mean by hacking it specifically, but when you say that, to me, I just think about like making sure your movie is done like in August or, you know, around that time. So it's like ready to be submitted to, you know, Sundance, whatever.
Right. It's like you start in the summer for the fall film festivals, but then if your film is not a fall film festival film, and I think I agree with you, everyone should submit, everyone should be screened. I talk about this in the show all the time. Like, it's not just about getting into the film festival, it's being screened by the screeners, right? Like, you want the programmers to watch your movie, like they're curators, they're tastemakers, but it's still kind of like you're sitting there waiting for 6 months until you get to the regional film festivals that are most likely going to take your film. And then for those 6 months, you're playing head games with yourself. You're checking your email. You're like obsessing. You're worrying. You're talking to sales agents. There should be an easier way to go through this process for filmmakers. So it's not just this wild, wild west all the time.
Yeah. One of the things I've seen on a movie that I'm working I helped on with Mitch, is that they got a sales agent before they even made the movie, and then or a potential sales agent that were like, oh yeah, we're probably in, like we're in, and then like when the movie was done, they're like, yeah, we're definitely in, And so, like, the burden has been lifted off of their shoulders, and then they basically just take the cues from the sales agents. And they're like, okay, submit to this film festival. We need a screener by this date. Submit to this film festival. We need a screener by this date. Okay, that didn't work out. Okay, now we're going to do this market. We're going to hit this market, and this is where we're going to, like, really sell the film. We're going to do this trailer release and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, all that shit is, like, off your plate as a filmmaker, and you're basically just, like, you're working with a team who's got your back and, like, knows the best way to sell your movie, especially if, like, you do get, like, you know, rejected from Sundance and South By and TIFF and all those places. It's like, okay, now we know, like, the best way to position this to get into X Festival or to just sell it directly to a buyer in this way, you know? Yeah.
So. And I'm on three films right now that haven't premiered yet. And, like, it's always really flattering, right? When a filmmaker comes to you and they're like, we want to work with you. And we thought about it before our festival premiere. And we thought about it before we've been on the festival circuit for like a year. It's very forward thinking. But also, sales reps aren't clairvoyant. Festival lobbyists aren't clairvoyant. And still, like, these. And then the cost of submissions. I agree that that's a good solution. And I wouldn't want to turn away work or an opportunity to promote myself. But I still think that, like, that's still another opportunity where filmmakers get taken advantage of, too, by really shitty sales agents who promise the world and deliver nothing.
Yeah, totally. Okay, we're supposed to go to the game, but Eric has not sent the game question, and I've been texting with him.
Oh. Make up a question. Make up a question. Make up a question. I can think of one, too.
No. You did it for me. I should be able to do it for you. Yours was great, though. I don't think mine's
going to be based on real life.
Well, yeah,
which I'll never admit again, but whatever.
No one knows which question are we talking about. We don't know.
Right, that's a good point.
Okay, let's say you're working on a low budget indie film. It's one of those projects where you scraped and script and pained and pushed to get it made. You have a cast that you love, that you believe in, and you really, really trust them in a big way to help you make this movie. And your lead is basically, the lead role is now, like, you have a producer on your team who has been pushing other cast, and you're like, yeah, I want to work with other cast too. I would love to work, have a name in the movie, but, you know, I just don't know if it's going to happen. And then, like, 2 weeks before you start shooting, you've already done rehearsals and prep and everything. They find an actor of a name that we all know, like some sort of named actor who maybe isn't, like, A-list, but, like, you know, is a recognizable name that, like, is definitely going to carry weight in the market. They want to be in the movie, but only if they can play the lead role, and they're ready to go, and they're free. And they say, I'm in, but you've already had this, like, and you think they would do a good, let's just caveat, you think they would do a good job in the role, but it is not the same as, you know, having the person who, you know, you have been working with for weeks and months on this project. So do you, A, go with the lead role and find another role for your lead and explain it to them and just say, hey, look, I know we had this goal, this vision, but, you know, like, I can't turn down this opportunity that's going to result in this movie being sold. Or do you stick with your guns and stick with the cast that you believe in and try to work the other actor into another role, but, like, knowing that they're probably going to walk, or almost certainly going to walk, if they don't get the lead role?
That's a tough question. I'm going to pretend you're Eric and that you can't answer my follow-ups. Okay. But my follow-ups are like, is this a genre film and are they going to get paid the same rate? Which I don't know if you feel comfortable answering either of those questions.
I just say the rate is covered and doesn't affect your movie, and that they're willing to work with the numbers that you have.
And if it's, I assume this is not a horror film, because if it was a horror film, it wouldn't be so cast dependent, right? So, like,
let's say it's a movie that, like, is definitely going to benefit from having a better cast.
Right. It's interesting because I've kind of been in this scenario twice in the same movie where I had someone who was repped by CAA and kind of had what I thought was going to be a catapulted career. It did not end up being a catapulted career. Touched my movie and we let her go because she wasn't right. And then we went with an actress who was an unknown because she was right. And I've gone through, and I've talked about it many times in the podcast, I've gone through, like, many different levels of acceptance and rejection of whether that was the right strategy, and landed on acceptance at the end of the day because of the bond I formed with her because of that movie and how meaningful it was to both of us and how that seems to have more value than the inches that we might have earned with a different actress, right? I think it would be inches. In our article with Filmmaker Magazine, I mean, maybe, who knows? You could tell me that it's not. But when we did this article with Filmmaker Magazine, we derived that only a very small number of cast actually move the needle. And so, yes, you may have name cast that may be recognizable, that may get people to be like, oh, I'll watch that trailer or whatever. But motivating someone to watch a movie and rent it or go to the movie theater is a completely different thing than getting their attention on the internet. So I think that I would probably go, I'd like to think I'd go with the original cast. Because if you're spending weeks together, like, that's loyalty. And you and I are very loyal people. And that feels so yuck. That feels so yuck to break someone after that major of a commitment. If it were like you cast them, you never really did a rehearsal, maybe you had one day, you talked about it, there's very low commitment there, then I would probably go towards the name cast. But if you're rehearsing for like a few weeks, you have chemistry, you have a working relationship, you know how you're going to make this movie and you have a vision for it, I would probably stick with the original cast. How about you?
I don't know. I mean, having made a movie with unnamed cast and, you know, it being a genre movie and it being a deal as like why we don't have international or any international sales is because we don't have any cast in our movie. At least that's what my rep keeps telling me. And I think it's probably true. Yeah, it would be hard. It would be really hard. And I'm really a loyal person and I wouldn't want to do that to an actor. But I think given what I know of the market and how these names really make the difference between people watching a movie. I mean, I know you said, oh, does it really make a difference? I think it does. Like, I think if there's a movie,
there has to be a certain level of actor, really.
Right.
Like a very small grouping of actors, I would say.
Well, I'm saying like anyone who has a fan base, right? Like, you know, Dolph Lundgren, for example, he has like a huge fan base. Like if you could get Dolph Lundgren in your movie, it's going to make a difference. Like people are going to seek out because they watch every single thing that Dolph has ever done and will ever do. You know, and he's not like one of these people that you're talking about in your like list of like, you know,
no, I think actors he is. That he's got he's got value. I'm not saying it's all Cate Blanchett. I'm saying it's like for your genre, there is 20 to 30 actors per genre that move a needle. And right. I've decided, because I didn't want to face the truth, that your actor that you're suggesting in your hypothetical situation is not in that grouping, but you have decided that they are in the grouping.
No, well, that was to me, it is like part of the question was like, they'll definitely make a difference. You know, it's not like Tom Sizemore, you know,
aww, or some
rest in peace. I know.
R.I.P.
Yeah, but I mean, or Eric Roberts, even.
But I think those people in that
Eric Roberts certainly doesn't make a difference because he's in every single person's movie in the world. And like, he definitely does not like move the needle. I mean, he's a great actor and he's in amazing stuff, but like, either of us could get him in a feature this summer if we called him up, you know? Like, so I don't think
you're discussing two different things. You're discussing gettability and value, and international sales value is different than domestic sales value.
But gettability and oversaturation in the market is a real thing. So like, if there are actors who are in tons and tons of movies, like Eric Roberts, they're less valuable, you know, in the marketplace to as a sale than, you know, someone who isn't in his
movies. I don't know if that's true. I genuinely, like, if you say that an international sales company told you that, then that's one thing, but it sounds speculative still.
No, that's what my executive producer said.
And he said that's oversaturated.
Yeah, that if actors who were good like maybe 5 years ago, if they make too many movies, then they don't have the same value as they did 2 or 3 years ago or whatever, because they got oversaturated in the market. Like, that's why some of the names that we had lined up for our movie aren't playing, because they made too many movies with these guys. And not just him, but like in general, you know, like they've just been in too many things, you know. And that, like, if you oversaturate yourself, it's like the power that your name has to generate, you know, investment or, you know, or like, or a MG from a distributor goes lower, you know. But like, if you're somebody like Ben Foster, who like doesn't do that as many movies, it's like his value like stays super high.
And he's just like the best actor ever. I agree with everything you're saying, but I also think that nobody knows anything, and people just say these things, but they make logical sense.
That's also true.
It makes logical sense.
I'm not going to disagree with that. I mean, but you know, I do think that like it's tricky, but I do think that like, yeah, if Eric Roberts was in the alternate, would that make the movie affect the sales? Maybe, probably not. But like, if Dolph Lundgren was starring in it, you know, I think it would probably make a difference. But Dolph Lundgren would never do it because there's not enough action for Dolph Lundgren. Anyways, but we're running out of time. We got to end this episode. Let us know what you think. Do you disagree or agree with Liz or I? What are your guys' thoughts on, you know, actors in the international marketplace or in the marketplace in general? You can always send us a question, comment, or suggestion to podcasts@makingmoviesishard.com. If you really like the show, you can leave us an iTunes review. We just got one this week, which was amazing. Thank you, MK Bryce. And finally, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at MMIH Podcast. And YouTube at Making Moves is Hard Podcast. Thanks to our editor, Jeff Breimut, for doing the editing. And thanks to our producer, Eric Tons, for being awesome. Thanks to you all for listening. And we'll talk to you guys next week.
At Amica Insurance, we know it's more than a life policy. It's about the promise and the responsibility that comes with being a new parent. Being there day and night. And building a plan for tomorrow, today. For the ones you'll always look out for, trust Amica Life Insurance. Amica. Empathy is our best policy.
When it comes to teaching kids and teens about money, practice makes perfect. That's where Greenlight comes in. With a debit card and money app of their own, kids learn to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest. Parents send instant money transfers, create custom chores, and automate allowance, while kids track their spending, set savings goals, and practice money skills they can use today and for life. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.